Here we go again.
It's time to talk.
I thought it was April Fool's Day when I heard that one. Get me off the air before I have a heart attack. We will have nothing to see for it. There's been many false dawns.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
The kindness of Cork people who never let you down.
Conversation that matters.
And be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. Front page of the Red Tops this morning. Talk about the shooting of a young man gunned down in a hail of bullets. A drug runner, the age of 20, who allegedly was on his way to bomb a rival, was shot to death on his way to pipe bomb a gangster's house or property or whatever. The Wild West shootout. The Mercedes that he was in was rammed by a motor car carrying at least three gunmen, armed with fairly heavy-duty weaponry. Drug runner shot at least 10 times as rival gangs clash in a Wild West shootout. It's the stuff of absolute mayhem with regards to drugs, drug dealing, inter-gang feuding. And this guy, 20 years old. A young man by the name of Josh Itzelli, blasted to death in Drimna at 12:15 yesterday morning. That's why the Star this morning calls it the Wild West. They found a pipe bomb after the multiple shots were fired in this ambush, and he was blasted with an assault rifle. Rival gangs crashed into his car. The Mail this morning carried as well, horror as young man killed in a Wild West shooting. Three have been arrested, incidentally, with regards to that incident above in Dublin. So it dominates many of the front pages today. I often think about that. On the one hand, of course, it's absolutely horrific. Wild West, I mean, I think, you know, that's one way of describing it and summing it up. But there isn't a week goes by now that we don't have feuds and, shootings and then reprisals. But at the same time, then, we seem to relish it when it's on television. I was thinking about this again this morning, whether it was back in the day with Love Hate or most recently in the really, really excellent production that is Kin. But Kin isn't too far from these kind of stories. So why is it that we are horrified when it's in real life, but for some extraordinary reason then, we relish to watch it when it's on our television set? Text 0868 104 106. Meanwhile, many people then struggling to get into a hospital or to get to see, or even to get an appointment to see if they need to go to hospital, or even an appointment to see somebody who tells them what's wrong with them. It goes on, the chaos continues. Front of the Echo today talks about people being taken off waiting lists, vulnerable people being removed from Cork Hospital waiting lists without ever receiving any treatment. And Dr. John Sheehan in Blackpool says that patients are being removed from lists that they wanted to stay on, and it's something that he sees on a regular basis. Now, and I don't doubt him for a moment, a very capable GP and local councillor. But at the same time, you have to look at kind of what happened here. The Echo got a Freedom of Information request responded to. Almost 80,000 people are on waiting lists for outpatient and inpatient appointments. They were sent out letters asking if they still needed treatment. And then of the nearly 80,000 who were sent letters, about 12,000, just over 12,000 people didn't respond. So you would think, am I misreading something, that if over 12,000 people didn't respond, you would take them off the list so that those that did respond and were on the list would be seen faster? No? Now, even though 12,269 people didn't respond, they then went and took nearly 13,500 off the list, an extra 1,000. So confusion upon confusion. But I don't know whether you were ever on a waiting list and taken off it without you knowing about it. And then when you ultimately found out, maybe you were off it for a lengthy period of time. Get in touch if you have been. Text 0868 104 106. And one of the main reasons why you're seeing more people being arrested for drunk driving or drug driving over the bank holiday weekends, certainly the one just gone, 169 people arrested by Gardaí for drink or drug driving, is because there will be more checkpoints now and more speed vans across the country pulling people and, you know, breathalyzing them and what have you. And some of that has to do with the fact that there's more Garda presence now, since every member of an Garda Síochána has been told that they must spend at least 30 minutes of every shift on the roads, policing the roads in general. The state then goes from, you know, one chaotic situation to another when it comes to migrants and pitching of tents. They cleared away all of the tents at Mount Street at the International Protection offices, and then As soon as that shanty town was dismantled, another one apparently has now grown on the Dublin canals. I don't know what the number is at this stage, but according to the papers, when they went to print, there was another 70 tents erected along the Grand Canal, and possibly even more since the papers went to press. So that's why this morning the papers are saying that the government's been accused of going on holidays and going into hiding when it comes to failing to address how are we going to deal with the emergency of new tent cities with regards to migrants who are coming into the country, want to stay here, we're overwhelmed, and of course there is nowhere to house them properly. So they're either given letters and told, sorry, come back tomorrow, or indeed they're just maybe talking with different organisations who are providing them with tents themselves. But there were demonstrations then in Dublin at the weekend, according to the Mail. There was, I suppose you'd call it a demonstration and then a counter demonstration. The Mail this morning talks of demonstrators gathering for a protest about immigration, and many of the protesters were wrapped in tricolours. They had placards with messages on them like Irish Lives Matter and Coolock Says No. There were chants, get them out, get them out, get them out. And at the same time, there was a counter protest at the GPO with messages saying Unite Against Racism, and another sign saying Refugees Welcome. Brenda Power in the Mail this morning asks the question as to whether somebody who's here, being provided with accommodation and, you know, a small payment while they're here as asylum seekers, or indeed in what would be direct provision and things like that. She puts the figure at about 26,000, and the question is being asked as to whether or not, if they are working, and they are allowed to work if the asylum seekers are working, do they have to contribute in any way, shape or form to their accommodation and their upkeep, even a small amount towards their keep? Apparently they could if they want to, but apparently none do. And that's her column this morning. She says, it turns out that in fact working asylum seekers can already be asked to contribute towards their housing costs if they're working. But when the question was asked in the Dáil, the answer was as to whether anybody actually is. How many asylum seekers in employment are paying something towards their accommodation? Alas, Brenda Power says, we shouldn't be surprised that the answer to this one is none. Papers also then talk today of a complete and utter overhaul of RTE. Where have I heard that before? How many times have I heard that one before? I mention it because there's a front page of Making the Independent today saying they just found some other kind of a barter account or money in some sort of an account. As they were putting it this morning, there's just like €654,000 just sloshing around in an account within RTE that nobody knew anything about. And on the other hand, of course, they're begging and pleading for bailouts and licence fee money and all sorts of things like this. But the infamous barter account had nearly €655,000 sloshing around in it that nobody knew anything about. I mean, talk about trying to overhaul that organisation. I don't know whether you should just push reboot completely as opposed to band-aid after band-aid after band-aid. I'll come back to this story in a few minutes' time. It's the great Jason Nicol, who has just completed the Marathon des Sables. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. It was on his bucket list. It's a 253-kilometre challenge across the Sahara Desert. Hope he loaded up at the LucasAid. Or the Tanora. Anyway, more on that in a few minutes' time. And then, of course, there's a lovely story making this morning's Red Tops. Over in the UK, there is a competition now amongst, and I think they've shortlisted it now down to 10 small businesses who are battling it out for the punniest name on the high street. So these would be shops or companies with names that really sum up what they do. And I'd love if we could get a Cork version of this going. We could give away tickets for Live in the Marquee. If you could come up and start texting company names that really work, or that are funny, or that are punny, or that are corny. Let me give an example of what I'm talking about. So these are the titles now that are into the shortlist. Barber Streisand for a barbershop. Prince Charming for a printing shop. Furry Godmothers for dog grooming. I think that's kind of weak myself. I get the furry bit. The Lord of the Bins, which is just superb. For waste clearance, you got it. Pokenom for Asian street food. Easy Lay Landscaping is another definite winner. Easy Lay Landscaping for gardeners. Sherlock Homes for locksmiths. Thready or Not for embroidery, not spelt K-N-O-T-T. Take a Chance on Me for an Indian restaurant. And finally, Top of the Clops. Top of the Clops for an equestrian shop. There's got to be Cork shops or businesses with really funky names that suit what they do. So do share them. Text 0868104106. The best one we come up with, or we'll get people to vote, the best of them all, tickets for Live of the Marquee. So come on, text on that one. Can you beat any of those on Lee's side? And then, of course, it is Eurovision week. We got the first of the two semi, as the Angst would say, the first of the semi-finals tonight with Bambi Thug. Depends who you talk to. Either we're eighth favourite to win it, or we're sixth favourite to win it, or as we get closer this morning, even heard that we're fifth favourite to win it. But Bambi Thug does their thing tonight in the first of the two semi-finals. And we tie with Sweden for the most wins ever. But it's been 28 years since our last win, and you got to wonder, is this going to be our year? So more on Malmo in a little while later this morning. We got live calls from people who are going to be there. And did you ever come up with all, the things you should or shouldn't do? One of the ones actually that was a big topic of conversation in our home recently was the freezer. Because if you open the door of our freezer now, you mightn't find it full of food, like frozen foods or, saved dinners or, chicken or, the odd bit of food that's in the freezer. It's probably likely to be 50% food and 50% freezer blocks, because they believe in my house that you should always have the freezer absolutely full. It runs more efficiently and it costs less to run. So our freezer is full of either freezer bags that are frozen solid or freezer blocks that are frozen solid. I find them awfully annoying. I really and truly do. But what do I know about it? So there is a story making the echo today about the 9 ways to get the most out of your fridge freezer. And one of them is to keep it full. The fuller the freezer, the more effectively it will work to keep your food fresh. Another one is to label things. How many people put, a lot of people gone back now to Pyrex or the, some of the plastic version. You can get the glass version with the sealable top. And you put dinner that you didn't eat into it and you put it into the freezer. But then you go back a week later and you have no idea what's inside in it, because you just can't make out what the food is. What is that? Is that a curry? Is that a stew? Is that some sort of a soup or something? So they're saying label up. So label up, keep it full, and be aware of the length of time that you can actually keep things in the freezer itself. Some can last for 2 to 3 months and some for only a matter of weeks. So you want to be checking those things out. It's a bit like saying keep the freezer full, even if it's full of things like freezer bags and freezer blocks. And there are others then feel you should always leave the immersion on. Never turn it off. It's cheaper to run it if it's on all of the time. I shudder at the thought of it, because apparently it costs more to fire it up, bring it up to temperature, than it would if it was always, always steady. And then there's a lovely article making the Mirror this morning, which I'll come back to later on, with regards to the outdoors, your garden, what we should and shouldn't be doing. You've heard of this no-mow May, as in we're being encouraged not to cut the grass in May. Oh my God, it's like a wilderness out there if you weren't doing that. And others then talk about setting aside a wild patch that you do absolutely nothing to, because the bees will love you for it. More on that later on.
Call Neil now. 0818-104-106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
All right, let's get all the details from Jason Nicol and his run across the desert. He joins me by phone. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
First of all, congratulations. It was an incredible achievement to finish top 30 out of 850 starters across the Sahara Desert. Am I right?
Yeah, Neil. It was an incredible experience. It was a 253-kilometer race across the desert over 6 days.
So it's like a marathon. It's a marathon every day.
Yeah, pretty much. Day three was actually a double marathon day, so it was actually 85 kilometers over the sand dunes. So I think an incredible experience.
Oh my God! Listen, before we get into the actual run itself, how do you train for something like that? I mean, like, is it up and down the beach on y'all, or do you train on? How do you do it?
Well, having done the All-Ireland a couple of times and ran it, I suppose, the miserable conditions in 2019, okay, I didn't want to see you all again. So I was out to Inchbeach a number of times. I think, you know, ran with a backpack along Inchbeach, but was also very much training up in Killavullen, up in the trails there, and generally just trying to find soft terrain, right, wherever I could actually find it. And more importantly, just going out with a heavy backpack every day and trying to strengthen the body up, and also then the mental side, right? Just trying to kind of mentally prepare for the extreme conditions as best I possibly could. So I also built out a heat chamber at home, which was a little bit mad, but I think it proved, to be quite beneficial.
You get into it and run in a chamber, is it?
Yeah, basically, I got some insulation paneling in MDOJ's and Ballincollig's and 2x2s, and I built out a structure around the treadmill at home and put two conventional heaters into it and managed to get the heat chamber up to around 38, 40 degrees centigrade every day. For 2 weeks before the event, I basically lived in that, acclimatizing, okay, to the high temperatures, training on the treadmill, to give myself the best opportunity that when I arrived into the desert, the body, would be able to adapt quite quickly.
You lived in that chamber?
Well, I not quite lived it, okay. Trained it, okay, more so than that, but at times you were never tempted, okay, all right, to stay in there quite a bit of time.
I could do maybe 20 minutes in a sauna and I'm done. Absolutely done. And that's sitting down. But like, what kind of temperatures over the 6 odd days?
Yeah, the temperatures varied actually quite a bit. Like nighttime temperatures got down to probably 8-10 degrees, but during the day then temperatures climbed into the 40s, and on the long day, the double marathon day, a temperature of 52 degrees was actually reported. So it was quite extreme, but I was prepared for it in some way. Like I was wearing long sleeve tops, I was wearing a sun hat, that protected my face. I obviously had sun cream on. But one of the hardest parts, actually of the race was the fact that for the first 3-4 days we had zero wind, so there was no cooling effect on the body at all. And it was just the sheer buildup of sweat and sand on your clothes as well. That was quite challenging. And for the entire week, I wore the same clothes. You're trying to carry a backpack that's as light as possible, but while also carrying your food for the week, because it's a fully sufficient race. Meaning, you have to bring everything for the week.
So you don't have any backup, Oh my god! How do you hydrate as you go along?
Yeah, so the organisers give you an allocation of water every day. So you're given 5 litres when you cross the finishing line every day. However, during each stage race, there are checkpoints, that give you the opportunity to fill up, your water bladders and bottles. And those checkpoints effectively became your lifeline, really, because, out in the desert, it's a pretty hostile environment. There isn't a lot to see. you are very much living from checkpoint to checkpoint, and that was also the only opportunity where you got some shade, right? And apart from that, it was we stayed in a bivouac. It's what it's called. It's kind of like a traditional Moroccan tent, an open sided tent. And I was staying with seven strangers. Okay, I suppose that very much became allies, as the week went on.
Okay. So what about a lot of questions for you? What about food?
Yeah, so the food, you obviously have to bring, your food for the week. I ate a lot of dehydrated, expedition foods. I would have, brought a porridge oats, for breakfast, that I would have just added water to it. But I opted not to bring a stove in the interest of weight. So my dehydrated meals were very much cold every evening. I carried food with me, obviously, for during each stage race. So I would have had electrolytes and carbohydrate-based foods, and also some glucose-based products as well, to get me through.
So if somebody brought a stove, it's not as if they'd stop halfway through the race and fire up the stove and cook a few sausages on it. Like, they'd use the stove at night.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, to boil some water. Okay, to add, you know, to their dehydrated meal to reconstitute. Like, okay, correct.
Like, was there a morning when you'd wake and just the body was refusing to move, kind of thing?
Yeah, it was by no means a perfect race. Because of the weight of the backpack, I ran into fierce shoulder problems after the first two stages. My shoulder muscles had completely locked out, and I was in a lot of pain. Obviously, you know, because of the sand and the rocky terrain, I picked up a lot of blisters underneath the toenails that had to be treated, after every stage. And again, because of the nature of the race, you had to do that yourself, you know. So, like, you finished every stage and you went up to the medical tent and there was a table of syringes and there was a case, okay, of popping those blisters and taping them and preparing for the next stage race tomorrow. And that cycle continued for 6 days. It was the recovery was just so important. But I think I probably underestimated the feet, the importance, okay, of you know, feet management and looking after the feet. And I, you know, I was quite fortunate in that what I had just a number of blisters. Like, I did see athletes, you know, that had to drop out because, you know, their feet were so emaciated, you know, from the sand.
Yeah, so yeah, like, because it's not your natural habitat, like, it just isn't. But do you know when you're actually running a leg of it, are you with others or are you out there on your own? Is it very split up?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think for me, I was pretty much isolated a lot of the days because I was, you know, somewhat, you know, at the head of the pack per se. You know, and it can become quite isolating. There's a lot of things, okay, that go through your mind when you're running in such an environment. I think the 85K stage, you know, was a stage where, you know, I didn't see anybody for hours. You know, they might have only been a couple of kilometers ahead or behind me, but because of the vastness of the desert, you know, you didn't really get to see that many people.
So do you hallucinate or anything like that?
It didn't happen really for me, but it is true, you know, like those mirages. That
yeah, you see them in the movies.
They do look like lakes in the distance somewhat, but unfortunately, I never came across one lake or river. I ran across a lot of dried lake beds for sure. You know, that was, you know, quite challenging because the heat, you know, just seemed to radiate, you know, off everything back up onto the body. You know, but, you know, I think you're, like I said, the checkpoints were very much, okay, your lifeline. And I think you were just breaking down every single stage race, you know, to get to those checkpoints.
Yeah, yeah. Over the next sand dune, it'll be there. Over the next one. Like, do you come across any nomadic tribes, camels, snakes?
I think that was one thing that I wasn't expecting. I came across a lot of camels in the desert. Got a little bit worried, okay, when I came across two dead camels. The camels aren't surviving, okay, like, then we might have a problem. But in terms of nomadic tribes, no, we didn't. You know, I think I find it even hard to see how they'd survive. I didn't see any wells or anything like that either. And you know, it was very much, there was very very minimal vegetation growing out there. It was a very harsh environment, very rocky terrain as well. You know, like, you had big mountains, okay, like in the desert as well. You know, with, you know, that were effectively sand dunes. You might go up one side of a Jebel. It's what it's called. It might be a rocky technical climb, and then you come down the other side, and you might be running down a sand dune for 500 meters, 600 meters, you know, at around a 20% gradient. And you so know, you, that was pretty cool.
But if you were to break a leg there, would you have been found? I mean, it's very, very hostile.
Yeah, like everyone has to wear a GPS tracker, and in fairness, like the tracker has an emergency beacon on it. Also, they had air ambulance, you know, so like they did have a helicopter, okay, that was going around the course. Unfortunately, pulling bodies off the course, not dead bodies, but obviously people who were injured or suffering from heat exhaustion. So I must admit, like, the organization was superb. There was a lot of medical personnel on standby, you know, should anything go wrong, you know. But
were you ever thinking when you were doing it, you know, like, that if this was a person out here on their own, there is no way you could survive this environment, you know, and many 100%. Didn't, of course.
100%. I don't know how you'd survive it. You know, the heat was such, it was too taxing on the body at times. Even when we finished every stage, like, I think the first thing we had to do was just to run straight for the bivouac tent and lie under the tent and get out of the heat. But there is nothing attractive about the desert, believe me. I don't know how anything would survive out there long term.
Okay, got to ask you, why did you do it?
Why? Like, I suppose, you know, I've always been into, you know, tough events, you know, like I've done a lot of marathons in the past. I've been doing Ironmans, okay, for a number of years. And I was just looking for that next big challenge, you know, that would probably challenge me both mentally and physically. And you know, being a runner, you know, I knew about this event for a long, long time, and I wanted to complete it. You know, so I think, like, for me, it was just the ultimate test of mind and body. And I think it certainly lived up to expectations. You know, it was a race that probably for the first time it really broke me mentally a couple of days in. You know, you don't have those simple luxuries, okay, that you have at home, such as a toilet, a shower, or, you know, cold water, a fridge, a chair even. You know, you have none of those luxuries. And you know, I think you've no family, no friends kind of around the time as well. So, like, you know, the whole thing was the ultimate test. You know, I'm delighted. I'm delighted. I obviously...
So are you saying that if it broke you mentally, are you saying that was there a stage when somebody had to kind of convince you to keep going? Was it a fellow competitor or something?
No, like, I suppose, like, in the sense that I think the conditions, okay, were so tough, and the injuries that I had kind of picked up during the initial stage were such that I didn't know whether I was able to kind of maybe get through the longer stage. Like I mentioned, my shoulder issues. I made a couple of calculated decisions. Okay, like, you know, after day two, to lighten the bag by actually giving away some of my food, which was probably, you know, a crazy idea. But
yeah,
I had to take pressure
crazy.
Off the shoulders. I think, look, you know, I think every single athlete, I think that does Martin Nassab will probably say the same. That is, it is one of the most mentally challenging races in the world. Not because of the physical element of it, but because of the self-sufficiency nature of the race and to survive.
Okay, so if that's the toughest that you could ever come across, what's left on the bucket list to challenge you further than that?
Good question. I think, look, there's lots of exciting events out there, and, like, I think for me, I'm currently looking at maybe doing a 24-hour ultra, which is kind of essentially running nonstop, okay, for 24 hours and seeing how many kilometers you can run. And there's an event up in Belfast, okay, that I'm potentially looking at doing in June, and then in August there's Spartathon, you know, which is a 246-kilometer nonstop ultra. From Athens to Sparta, you know. So I think that, you know, that for me is probably the next challenge, is to see how the body can adapt to running nonstop, you know, over such long distances.
That's in Greece. It will be hot, but nowhere like the heat of the desert in the low 50s. And I know that you did this for the Irish Lung Fibrosis Association. So have you got a fundraiser going for that? Is that something close to your heart?
It is. You know, look, my mother got diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis probably, I think, over 12 years ago, okay, now at this stage. You know, so pulmonary fibrosis is probably a condition, okay, that wouldn't be known to many people, and there's no cure for it, and a lot of people suffering, okay, from illness, okay, have to get a lung transplant, and obviously not everyone, okay, can get a lung transplant, you know, due to the shortage, okay, of donors, you know. But the Irish Lung Fibrosis Association is a great charity that really supports patients and also families of those suffering, okay, with the illness. So I just thought, okay, look, you know, seeing as I was doing this extreme, you know, race, it might be a good opportunity to raise some awareness, both for the illness and also the charity.
Good man.
You know, that helps families.
Good man. You started out with a target of a grand, but you've smashed that. It's nearly $7,000 now. If people would like to donate, is the page still open?
It is. Yeah, it certainly is. I'm sure. Look, maybe I could send you across the link or something like that.
Would you mind doing that? Yeah, get it to me, yeah. And we'll give it a couple of pushes for you. Listen, an amazing undertaking and a fantastic result. It shows the power of mind over body, really, doesn't it? You're probably still finding sand in places where you never thought you'd find sand. Is there?
Yeah, no, you could say that. Like
behind your ears and your earlobes and other maybe southern nether regions.
Yeah, we best not stop with that.
All right, my man. We covered a lot of ground this morning, but nothing like your 253 kilometres in the Sahara Desert. Send me on the links and we'll give it a blast for you, Jason. Well done. Congratulations. Job well done.
Thanks very much, Neil. Appreciate it.
Text 0868104106. A mighty man from Ballincollig.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Text 0868104106. I see some crackers coming in there with the names of shops. The Chop Shop, a hairdressing salon in Skibbereen, says Pat McCroom. There's another one there. I don't know whether this is a makey-uppy one or it is actually a skip company called Been There, Dumped That. But if it's not, somebody should grab the name. It's a good one. Messy Buns is another one down in McCroom, according to Pat. There's a place called Chipsy Kings, a chipper as well, which is a good one. So keep those coming. Text 0868104106. Well, as I mentioned, it is Eurovision week, the first of the two semi-finals tonight. And Ireland's entry features in tonight. Will this be the song that's going to do it for us? With Doomsday Blues. It's got a very, very catchy chorus, hasn't it? But in spite of all of that, I think it is fair to say that Doomsday Blues is not getting airplay and hasn't since it was chosen as Ireland's Eurovision entry. West Cork man Seamus O'Neill has tickets, not just flight tickets, but Eurovision tickets. He runs a podcast called I'm Sorry, 0 points, and he'll be in Malmo and should get there tomorrow at some stage. But just ahead of the semi-final tonight, Seamus, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm good, pal. I'm good. There's a headline online that I Googled, right? And it kind of sums it up. 7 wins, 3 in a row run in the 90s. Ireland once ruled the Eurovision Song Contest, but in the 21st century, it has never managed to recapture the magic. Is this the song that could do it, Seamus?
Well, those stats are sadly true, but yes, I think this is the year where we could potentially win again and take back our crown as leaders in the Eurovision Song Contest. I certainly hope that'll happen, and it is looking positive for Bambi Thug.
So it is pretty much guaranteed that Bambi Thug will get out of the semi tonight, right?
Yeah, if you're looking at the betting, they've been rising in the betting over the past kind of couple of weeks and couple of months, very steadily rising. And I think we're now, I think, fourth favourite to get out of the semi-final. And then I think we're fifth favourite overall to win the thing. So it's exciting times as a Eurovision fan. But I think all Irish Eurovision fans are a little bit nervous as well because we haven't done so well over the past kind of 24 years. But yeah, it's looking really positive, and I certainly think they will qualify tonight.
Okay. But for that to happen, they have to smash 36 other songs first, right?
They do. They have tough competition, obviously. And even in tonight's semi-final, they are up against some favourites. The likes of Croatia, who is the current favourite to win the whole thing, is performing tonight. Their artist, Baby Lasagna from Croatia, is performing. And then also Ukraine are in tonight's semi-final as well, and they'll probably do very well as well. Ukraine generally do very well in Eurovision. They have a great track record. So there is tough competition there, but I believe they'll certainly qualify.
Okay, so you're saying favourite is Croatia. Why did I think it was Sweden?
No, Croatia and Switzerland have kind of been the favourites over the past couple of weeks.
Okay.
Sweden will do well as well. I don't think they'll win this year, but they will, of course, do well as they normally do.
But you see, second is no good. Third is no good coming third against behind Croatia and Switzerland. It just won't do.
I know it won't do, of course. Everyone wants to win. But at this stage, Neil, I think the fans are only too delighted to get into the final, let alone a top 10 placing for us would be amazing considering the poor track record we've had.
Okay. So will the same old kind of block voting happen again? You know, I'm not saying that it's rigged in any way, shape or form, but countries have a way of voting for neighbours and things like that, and it doesn't become about the song. I mean, I know we've had the Dustins and the entries that certainly left a lot to be desired. But when you have a good song, it's very exasperating when it's not fair.
Yeah, it is. And look, there's always that element of kind of block voting or neighbourly voting, and that does exist. But generally, the winner will still rise above all that. And I think we've seen that over the past few years. Of course, you'll have the Greeks and the Cypriots voting for each other. You'll have the Baltic countries voting for each other. That does happen. But generally, the winner will always kind of rise above that because there'll always be a common song that people like and vote for. So generally, the winner is a well-deserved winner.
Oh, yeah. There's a couple of fairly suspect wins in the past, wasn't there? A serious heavy metal outfit at one stage. I mean, you're saying that was the best song on offer?
Well, maybe not my cup of tea, but, you know, it certainly grabbed the attention of people across Europe.
And is that what it's about, really? The song's important, but you have to grab their attention with a stage performance that's memorable.
You do, yeah. I mean, you only have 3 minutes on stage, so it has to be memorable. But I think there's three things you need. You need a really good song, sung by a really good singer, and it needs to be visually impressive. And certainly what you're going to see tonight from Bambi Thug is visually impressive. I've been watching some of the rehearsal clips from yesterday, and it is like a piece of theatre. So, you know, they are ticking those boxes anyway.
So the days of the ballads are gone, the What's Another Years and the Hold Me Now and the Why Me's and things like that?
I wouldn't say that, because there are a couple of ballads in this year, especially from France. There's a really strong ballad from France this year, which I think will probably do well. It'll probably come top 10. So I wouldn't say the days of the ballads are gone, but it just needs to be a really good song. You can't go with a mediocre song anymore to Eurovision. It just won't cut it. And that's, I think, what Ireland have been doing the past kind of 10, 20 years. We've been sending basic, generic kind of pop songs that just haven't been good enough. So, you know, you need to go with a strong song, sung by a really good singer and presented well.
Okay. So, of course, the other aspect to Eurovision, and I know that the EBU has come out and said that, you know, the Eurovision Song Contest shouldn't be brought into disrepute or shouldn't be politicized, but yet there are those that are saying that it has been brought into disrepute because of the Israeli involvement at a time when, correct me if I'm wrong, Russia are still disqualified, are they?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Okay. Thoughts on that?
Look, I think everyone has thoughts on this, and it's certainly something that has divided the Eurovision fandom this year. And I know of people who are not going to Malmo this year in boycott. And I know people who won't even watch the show tonight in boycott because of Israel's participation. I do feel like the European Broadcasting Union missed a trick here. I don't think they should have allowed Israel in. I know that they worked closely with Cannes, the Israeli broadcaster, to rework the song because the lyrics of the song were too politically charged when it was originally written, and they changed it. Now, if you listen to the lyrics and read the lyrics, you still get the undertone of what the song is about. I think a lot of Eurovision fans feel that the Israeli government and the Israeli broadcaster are using the competition to kind of push their own narrative and push their own propaganda. People are a bit unsure of them being in it this year, and as am I, to be honest.
Yeah, well, in fairness, and, you know, you've come out and given your opinion on it, and I appreciate that. Do you think there'll be protests, or do you think there might be security issues there?
Yeah, there will be, of course. And even myself, like, this is my eighth time that I'll be going to Eurovision, and normally I'm never concerned about security, but I suppose it's the first time where I've thought about, okay, I need to be a bit careful where I'm going around Malmo, you know, who's around me. And even going to the arena, there will be much more security checks. You're not allowed to bring in a bag. You're not allowed to carry large objects. So security is definitely ramped up this year. And I know the Swedish policing authorities have brought in extra reinforcements from their neighbours in Norway and Denmark. So security is an issue, of course, as it always is at Eurovision, but it's definitely heightened this year.
Okay, fingers crossed that everything will go peacefully. Do a lot of Irish people travel to Eurovision, or does it depend on how far away it is for the Irish to travel? Maybe if it's too far, they wouldn't, but are you expecting many?
Yeah, depends on a couple of things. Depends on kind of where it's on and the cost, because it is a very expensive thing to go
to. How much would a ticket be if you were to snaffle a ticket for a final now? What would that be?
Oh, God. Anything from kind of 150 to 500 euro for the final, depending on your seats.
Wow.
So it's a pricey, yeah, it's pricey. And then you have to add in your flights and your accommodation, and of course, they're normally increased because, like anything, when there's a big concert on, hotels put up their prices and everything, and the flights get more expensive.
And of course, but this is an expensive country at the start anyway, isn't it?
That doesn't help, exactly, yeah. But there is a large Irish contingent going this year. I know a lot from the Irish Eurovision Fan Club are going, and many are over there already. I'll be flying over tomorrow morning, so there will probably be at least some 100 or 200 Irish fans there in the crowd cheering on Bambi Thug.
I know we've agreed that Bambi Thug will get out of the semis. Boyle mm-hmm. Sports are talking about 33-1 to win outright. That's disappointing, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Look, I think just getting into the final is a great thing. I think if we come in the top 10, that will be amazing. I think that would be absolutely amazing. That would be a victory for the Irish fans. I know Bambi is obviously there to win and wants to win. But if we came top 10, I think that would be amazing. I'd be extremely happy with that.
And tell me this, is Johnny Logan involved?
He is. We will see Johnny tonight as well. Yeah, he's been invited back. He'll be performing during the interval act in tonight's semi-final. And he'll be doing a special version of Loreen's winning song Euphoria, which she won in 2012. So he'll be doing a cover of that tonight.
Okay, a lot to see. It'd be great to chat with you later in the week. It really and truly would, particularly after yeah. After the semi-final tonight, as we head on into the week when the, you know, excitement will build and build ahead of the final. Are you up for that?
Absolutely, yeah. I'll be there. Happy to chat.
All right. Have a safe trip for now, though. Look after yourself. Take care, Seamus.
Thanks, Neil. Bye-bye.
Seamus O'Neill is part of a duo who have their own podcast, along with another buddy of his, Adrian. They present the Eurovision podcast called I'm Sorry, 0 points. Hero ones, actually, over the years, who got far from 0 points. They only went and won it outright.
whether or not there will be another song added to that montage in the shape of Bambi Thug's Doomsday Blues. We shall wait and see. Another one I think actually that should have been in there as a winner was Liam Riley's Summer in Europe. I think he got pipped at the post and came in second, and that was just a cracking song. However, can I just say, just to put this on the record, I don't watch Eurovision. That's fine. Nobody else's business but mine. But I can't help but feel that Eurovision will be won this year by not Croatia, not Switzerland. I'd love if it was Ireland, but I believe that it's Ukraine will win Eurovision. If the way Eurovision tends to work happens, I think there will be an enormous sympathy vote and that Ukraine will win Eurovision. Let's wait and see what happens. Back after 10, text 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And because yesterday was a bank holiday, today we have the Monday Munchies of a Tuesday. So the Monday Munchies of a Tuesday, courtesy of ourselves and Luso of Ballincollig. And everyone loves their chocolate and their cakes. And every single week you have an opportunity to win all sorts of delicious goodies from Luso in Ballincollig. And every week is a popular week because the cakes and chocolates and biscuits and everything is just so beautiful. But there's a particular favourite. It's the luxury mini bite box, and everybody loves that. And I'll tell you why. Because it's a box full of all of their super creations. It's got the Bailey's cheesecake in there, the salted caramel cheesecake, raspberry Bakewells, chocolate marquees, triple chocolate brownies, the rocky road, the crunchy peanut butter slices, chocolate fudge and lemon drizzle. That's just a, one of them. There's like well and truly over a dozen different, probably even more, well, more than a dozen in the luxury mini bite box. So you'll win all of that for you and your workmates if you text who you are and where you are to 086 810 4106. Get texting now. Red Patrollers will deliver the luxury bite box courtesy of ourselves and Luso Ballincollig. You can see everything they do, all of the photographs of their delicious creations are online, lusocork.ie, and also on Instagram. So text who you are and where you are to 086 810 4106, and we'll start those shout outs in about a half an hour's time. To those who have been texting me and also getting in touch with regards to me on my Instagram page, I am aware of this alleged sexual assault of a 12-year-old boy in a Cork City toilet last Thursday. We are very much aware of it. We've been in touch with An Garda Síochána. More on that in a moment. But I say an allegation because if this is a Garda investigation, it has to be left at that. But the claim is that a man pulled a young boy into a disabled toilet in Merchants Quay shopping centre. And then another man, thankfully, tried to enter the disabled toilet because the other cubicles were being cleaned at the time, opened the door and disturbed the man inside in the disabled toilet with the young boy. And the child then left the toilet, I'm told, quite quickly. And then security was called and the Gardaí subsequently arrived and they took this man away for questioning. I've seen the videos. Yes, I have. People have been in touch with me. I can also tell you that, we've been back and forth with a family member of the young boy. I can't go into any further details about this as to where this man is from or who he is or, you know, some of the allegations that have been made because it is a Garda investigation. And can I just say that a family member had wanted to speak with me on air about the matter, but I can't do that because the child involved is a minor, is underage, and I can't do anything on the air by talking to a family member that would identify a minor. It's just not allowed. It's just not something you can do lawfully. But the Garda Síochána did say to us that they are aware of an incident at Merchants Quay Shopping Centre on Thursday, the 2nd of May, and that it is currently under investigation. So it's not as if I'm not talking about it, but that's as much as I can say on the matter. Can I say, it was a great thing that somebody did open the door. Whoever that man was, well done. I know that security staff did get involved and detained an individual until the Garda Síochána came along. Well done. But at this stage, these are alleged allegations, as I say, and the Garda Síochána have to be allowed
do their thing and get on with their work. Now, I really cannot say any more about it than that, but the law precludes me from going into any further detail than that. Thank you. Text 0868 104 106. We got calls on the way.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Busy morning texting as well this morning. Thank you. And let me just do some of those, if you don't mind. Great start to the week, Neil, regarding your media reporting on road safety. All about the drink driving, I see, and zero mention of texting while driving. At this point, your reporting on it is actually irresponsible. Don't you know that? Because texting while driving is absolutely rampant, and you go on about drink driving. Text drivers are hearing these reports, and when these criminals are not mentioned for their casual 24/7 life and death gambling with road safety, they think they're off the hook. For every one drink driver out there, there's over 1,000 text drivers. That's potentially 1,001 coffins with 1,001 deaths caused by texting drivers. So that texter, that listener, is talking about texting as opposed to the stats that have been given out from the bank holiday weekend of people who were stopped, breathalyzed, and found to be over the limit. I can't disagree with that. I really and truly can't. You're right. It is an absolute, total, and utter scourge. There are lots of other road and driving texts that I'll come back to as well. Frank, I don't know why you're going on at me. Bambi Thug is a girl, Neil. Have some courage. Bambi Thug wishes to have the pronoun they used when it comes to their name, and I don't need any courage in any way, shape, or form, Frank. I'm not being a coward by using the pronoun. If they, or if Bambi Thug wants to be known as they, and if I can remember to call them they as often as I can, what's the big deal? You know, there's no skin off my nose if somebody doesn't want to be she and wants to be they. I mean, I get it wrong sometimes, but I'll continue to endeavour to get it right if that's what makes them happy. That's the world we live in now. But anyway, maybe others agree or disagree with Frank. Text 0868 104 106. Where did all the Irish winning Eurovision songs have in common? Well, they were all picked by the Castlebar Song Contest, says Paddy. We need to go back to that format. Let's see what happens tonight. Let's see what happens this week. I would rather watch paint dry than watch Eurovision or Bambi's entry. The last person to represent Ireland was Jack Lynch's... Well, actually, the last Cork person to represent Ireland was Jack Lynch's nephew, Cathal Dunne, but he wasn't a happy man. Boom, boom, as in the title of the song. I think you're wrong, Neil. It's to think that you can blame block voting. It's just that we haven't been picking the right songs. People laugh at Jedward, but they were our best placed act in a long time. They came 8th and 11th in their 2 years. Lordi were the metal band that you were referring to. I'm not into metal, but I love the song, and Lordi were well known. I think we kind of need to get over ourselves. We were the kings at Eurovision, but now times have changed, and we were too slow to go with the change. Until now. I think Bambi will do well and deserves it too. So let's see what happens. Text 0868 104 106. But just staying with this, and it is connected to my conversation with Habib, whose parents are originally from the north of Gaza. They are still there. Yes, if you're asking the question, was their home bombed? It most certainly was at the beginning of the war. And now they live in a tent in central Gaza. And I remember 6 months ago, or thereabouts, Israelis telling people in Palestine, move south, move south. You will be safe down in Rafah. Move south. And of course, a million did. And what's happening now? Israel is now bombing Rafah. The news overnight was that that Hamas were up for a ceasefire and also were willing to swap Israeli prisoners, which were being held as hostages. Well, I shouldn't say prisoners. Israeli hostages that were being held the exchange would have been Israeli hostages for Palestinian prisoners held by Israel, but the Israelis didn't agree to that ceasefire and didn't agree to that exchange, and have instead continued with the bombing and are bombing Rafah. I mentioned that actually because Habib joins me by phone. Habib, good morning.
Good morning.
And home for you now is Cork, isn't it, Habib?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But are you in touch with family back home?
Yeah. I'm talking to them every day.
Okay. And what are they describing to you?
They're describing the situation as like it's a terrible situation to mom because they have like no place to go, and they're struggling with the food and the water and medicine and you know the basics of life for to be alive, and they are scared from the situation and from the Israelis attacking Rafah, as you all see this morning, they're attacking the Rafah crossing. Mm. As we expecting my family to leave to evacuate Gaza soon, but I don't know what's going to happen because the Israelis controlling Rafah crossing at the moment.
Your mother has cancer, hasn't she?
Yeah.
She needs hospital, she needs medicine, she needs treatment, but can't get it. I think the hospital was bombed, was it?
Yeah. It was the Turkish hospital, and 2 months ago, the Israelis army, they were filming themselves destroying the hospital by their tanks, and clearly they're filming that, and no one have done something for them. It wasn't action from the national law and from the super powerful countries around the world. So my mom, she used to go to that hospital to get the medicine every week, because you know it's cancer is a serious illness. So
yeah, of course.
She needed medicine and good treatment, but they destroyed the hospital now, and even the hospital there were closed in Deir Bala. Shahed al-Aqsa, it's only for the emergency injuries and situations.
I can appreciate that, but and they're saying that they whatever facilities they have to be for those that are seriously injured from shrapnel, bullets or bombs.
Yeah, exactly.
I know, but it doesn't make it any easier on your family, or indeed on you, being so far away, feeling so helpless.
Of course, I just know I haven't seen them in 8 years. It's really hard even to call them now at the moment to get in touch with them and to see this situation and what's happening for them. They cannot get the food and their medicine, and they cannot, like, they're not comfortable at the moment. So
we have reached a point where people are starving. There has been alerts and warnings of famine. Have we reached that point?
Thank God, no, because I'm trying to send the money for them, and so they get some food and some help from the organizations there, but still it's not enough for them to get the needed of the food and the medicine. And I'm I want to thank Cork community here in Cork. They are standing with me, and they're trying to do everything to support me and my family in Gaza.
Yeah. I know you want to. I know you want. They're donating. My apologies. What are they donating, Habib?
They're collecting donations and to send the food and all the supplies for my family and the other families in Gaza.
Now, that was very disappointing news over the weekend, wasn't it? That Hamas had agreed to a ceasefire, an exchange of Israeli hostages for Palestinian prisoners, but Israel weren't having it. That's an awful disappointment, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very disappointing for everybody who's waiting for a ceasefire and stopping the genocide. But if you see the news, and you know that Israel is not caring about the hostages and freeing them, and they are just caring about the occupation, a new occupation of the few new lands, Gaza, and more. So if they agree, they will stop, and the hostages will be freed.
Mm. I think Israel really and truly are focusing on the complete and utter dismantling of Hamas, that they regard as a terrorist organization, and they just can no longer live with the threat of Hamas and what they did in October on their doorstep. Do you get that?
Actually, everybody is waiting for them just now, like almost 7 months, and every day they are saying that we are like we'll destroy Hamas, and they haven't done anything, and they didn't release any of the hostages by the military operations. So I don't think that will do something for Hamas. I'm not defending Hamas or anything, but I'm standing with my people in Gaza, and I want both sides to stop to stop this genocide against my people in Gaza. This is what do I want.
As reading in the Examiner, you were chatting with Liz Dunphy. You said they're facing death, bombing, starving, disease. You're heartbroken when your dad is asking you for help. It's the son who's usually asking for help from their father.
Exactly. Yeah. This is what I have seen last 2 weeks, because it's 200 days, and I used to call my father to ask him about the situation there, and he's saying like, "We are good, don't worry," and just to make me feel good and stronger. But the last time was so bad, because he's over, like they're disabled to like to be, you know, like optimistic about what's happening,
and
they're asking me to do something, because
asking you to get them out?
Yeah.
Is it possible to do that, even?
It was if you have lots of money, because the Egyptian border, you need to pay 5,000 per person to get one person out.
5,000 per person on the Egyptian border. And how many family members do you have there?
I have 7 of them. 2 of them are children. So I need in total 30,000 to get all of them out. And as you watch this morning news, and Israel is attacking, controlling the Rafah borders. So I think there's no way at the moment to...
And no way at the moment, but who gets the €5,000 per person?
The Egyptians.
Okay.
The Egyptians, governments, and...
How do they come up with the figure of €5,000 per life?
That's the question we're asking ourselves. I don't know. They're saying they're brothers, and they're standing with the Palestinian Kurds. So I don't know. I don't understand the situation. Who is it standing with me, and he's telling me that you are my brother, and is taking money over my soul
yes.
to get me
yes.
To let me get out from his border.
I'm wondering why. Border. Yeah, I'm wondering why. So you need to find 35 grand.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, we're talking about Eurovision. I don't know whether you have any thoughts on this. Like, obviously, Russia are still disqualified, but Israel are allowed to take part. Well, what do you think of this?
That's always my questions to the European nations and governments and USA as well, for doing the double standards. They are seeing Russia as a occupation, and they are seeing Israel as an innocent state. So I don't know if they are saying with the free speech and the free nations they should do something, and they expel the Israelis from every stage, every international stage in the world. If they are really care about the free stages and the international law, and they're not doing the double standards.
Okay, so you believe it's double standards now if Israel, at this stage, they will be competing. It's too late now. No country took it serious enough to say that if Israel compete, we're pulling out. That never happened.
Never going to happen, because they care about Israel, and always they are clarifying their war criminals as defending self-defense.
It's like double standards. It's like double standards,
yeah, it's a clearly double standards, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And like, are you happy to stay? Do you ever feel like rushing back home to be with family?
That's always was my dream, to at least to see them and to have a dinner with them one time. Like, but no, I actually don't know. I have nothing to think about.
You just want to get them out.
Yeah. Everything is mixed up now. Like, I don't know. I'm gonna be with them in the country. I don't know. I don't know if Ireland will accept their visa application, because as I applied for the visa application for them here, I'm not sure.
So it's about trying to raise the money and a waiting game, and hope that your family in the meantime won't die or be injured or be killed.
I'm trying to not think about that. I don't. I know that. That's the most thing gonna happen, but I'm not thinking about it, and I'm optimistic all the time. So
I know.
I don't want to be like a negative thinking of that, but sometimes you feel like it is what it is, and this is what's happening, and you have to expect everything. Well, I'm not thinking about it at the moment.
Is that a case of expect the worst, but hope for the best, or something like that?
Exactly, yeah.
And how can people help, Habib? I know you're living here in Cork now, you're working in Is Cafe on George's Quay, you're studying in UCC. Good luck to you with all of that. But you couldn't afford to put 35 grand together. So if people wanted to help, how can they help?
There's a way, as my friend, I was against to do something like GoFundMe or something in the beginning, because I've seen that evacuation is not as important as you give this money to people who needs the food. And that's more valuable, more than evacuating one family. So you can feed maybe lots of families in this money. But now, as my friend, his name is Tom O'Halloran, and he's doing the I Donate. That is a link you can donate through on the website.
What are people looking for if they go into I Donate? What are they looking for?
They just donate if they want, and there's another way. Lily Higgins, she is a food influencer, and she created a book, and you can buy it for €25 each.
I'd like to know what that book is, but perhaps somebody can tell me what the link is in iDonate. If somebody goes on to iDonate, what are they actually looking for to get to your page?
I don't have actually the full link with me, but if you write Habib Alastaz is my name on the
Thank
website.
You. Habib.
You'll find the link from the Irish Examiner, and you find it there.
I have you now. Okay. So I Donate and search for Habib. I'll get the full details. Don't worry about that. And I'll get it on the air in the next few minutes. It's very nice of you to say that if people want to donate to UNICEF.ie, then the money that they actually donate will also go to many Palestinians who are sick, facing death, bombing, starving, suffering with diseases. and need food and medicine. So let's also give that a push. That would be through unicef.ie and also your own iDonate. But so meanwhile, I suppose you're trying through legal channels with the Ministry for Justice to see if they can play a role and give permission for your family to come here. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, fingers crossed. Do stay in touch, Habib. Let me know if there are any updates, and I'll be happy to push the different appeals and fundraisers that are going on. But we're all thinking of you and your family, all right?
Thanks so much. Thank you so much.
Okay, Habib, take care for now.
Thank you.
I'll update you with all those details after the break.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Thank you to Habib, who obviously is very concerned about his family and at the same time says Israel should not be in the Eurovision. They should be expelled like Russia's been. Otherwise, it is just double standards and quite confusing. The iDonate.ie search, if you would like to help Habib and his family, is on iDonate.ie, and you're searching then for Cork City Marathon for Palestine. So on iDonate.ie, you're searching for Cork City Marathon for Palestine. Text 0868104106. Okay, I was talking about those done for drink driving across the bank holiday weekend. I get it. And then other people talking about dangerous drivers that could well be in their sober senses. I have a solution for the crazy drivers, particularly in rural Ireland. I travel the country roads and I have my full lights on. Anyone coming against me is forced to slow down and to look up. On the main roads, I don't have my fulls on, but on the country roads, I do. Did you ever stop and think, actually, that you could actually cause a crash by dazzling motorists coming against you, including those that you're dazzling who are not texting but driving responsibly? I mean, think about what you're doing. If you stay tight to the corner, you might have someone walking towards you, towards oncoming vehicles without a high vis. So what are you supposed to do on country roads? Slow down. It's the only way. Yeah, interesting text. And I suppose to some extent, that's why people tend not to drive on their own side of the road and in the middle of the road, is it? So they don't hit a pedestrian. You should come out to Bail na Blá. There are fine donuts in the middle of the road every Monday morning. Where are all the guards then? They know it's happening and nothing's done about it. They could shoot fish in a barrel. I'm a taxi driver. You're talking about reducing the speed limit recently. Half the time, I don't know what the speed limit is. There's so many signs covered by trees and ditches grown over them. They should paint the speed limits on the road so people can see them in front of them. That's a good idea, actually. That is a good idea. In Dripsy, a small county village, there are idiots with cars that have souped up lawnmower engines speeding around narrow roads. They were doing donuts again last night. The road surfaces are destroyed. We were promised new surfaces last year. There was only one small road done in the entire village after a huge announcement that the entire place would be resurfaced. Talk about being made fools of with youngsters speeding and never a guard in sight. Morning. The government needs to seriously clamp down on the criminals and reckless drivers. Something has to change. The roads are desperate. Fines need to be tripled and more Gardaí, more speeding vans and more speed cameras, please. I'm living in East Cork and if I was going 80 kilometres on those roads, I'd be flying it. And that's the legal limit. It should be 60 kilometres across all back roads in the country. Simple as that. I agree with that. I often drive many roads that are very, very dangerous rural roads and they're marked 80 and 100 and they should not be anywhere near that kind of speed. What happened recently outside McDonald's on the Commons Road? A car pulled out of one of the lanes to go towards the city. They tried to go up the middle of the two lanes of traffic, taking out three cars on their way. When you say taken out, obviously damaging or crashing. It was a young mother with a child and her partner. I couldn't believe that she didn't know the road was two lanes and not three. A coroner in Mayo said that it is taking up to 9 years for roads to be rectified where fatalities have occurred and crash investigations have taken place. 9 years. Motor tax money is rumoured to go into Fund Irish Water. Well, I didn't hear that. What is done with the money they collect from speed vans? Anybody know? Particularly when we have road surfaces that haven't been touched in years. And one final one for now. A lot of the problems with driver aggression is that everybody thinks they own the road. There was a time when a bus, a car, a motorbike, a cyclist, a horse and dray could go around the streets of our city in harmony. Now nobody gets on the roads anymore. So that's just a selection. One final one in relation to seeing guards on the beat, as you talk about all too often, or a lack of. I usually avoid town like the plague, but I had no choice but to go in Friday afternoon to pick up something for my daughter. During my time I was there, I saw two Gardaí proactively moving on beggars and patrolling on the beat of the city centre. In the hour or so I was in town, I can honestly say I passed the same two Gardaí at least half a dozen times. These two seemed to be everywhere. More of this, please. It's definitely needed, and what I saw, it's definitely working. Keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. And can I also mention at this stage our first shout outs for the Monday Munchies of a Tuesday, courtesy of ourselves and Luso. Morning to everybody at Cove Step YMCA. They're doing mock interviews today, and they'd love the mini treat box for the students and the staff. It's not even mini, it's a big box of cakes and biscuits and chocolates and treats of all sorts of varieties. Cotter Building and Ringaskiddy working hard as ever. To all of the crew at Maxi Zoo and Ballincollig at the head office after the long weekend, they could do with a sugar treat. Smurfit Kappa are on Paladuff Industrial Estate in Toker, and they're listening. ML Scaffolding, working with Mernan and O'Shea. Love the show, and we would love treats. We have loads of hungry lads on site. To Niamh and everybody at Ali Grace Clothing Boutique in Carrigaline, to Westside Orthodontics in Bishopstown. All the girls would love a luxury treat box. Lauren and the gang, morning to you all at Westside. Sweet 24 in the Cork Clinic, working hard. We could do with a treat. Morning to Lisa P, Grace, Sharon, Lisa M and Patricia. Everybody at Sports Gear Direct on the Tramore Road would appreciate the Tuesday Munchies. Everybody at the Cork City National Ambulance Service are listening this morning. To Cork Plumbing Office, there's 10 hungry plumbers. I'd love to nominate the staff and patients at St. Christopher's Ward in Marymount, says Mary. To the landscaping staff and the nursery staff at Currabeg Nursery and Ovens. And just two more, Pro Photonics. Good morning to all of the gang. And to all of the OTs and admin staff of the Sunflower Clinic in Cork. They're out at the Tramore Commercial Park and would be fab to pick us because they love cake. Why wouldn't you? So keep those texts coming. Text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106. We'll do another bunch of shout outs in about a half an hour's time.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
That's a good one, Coleman in White's Cross. I love it. He says it was coming up Wellington Road Friday afternoon when a lad looked like he was texting on his phone. He fell down 6 steps. Phone addiction is gone mad, says he. So texting away, head down, 6 steps ahead of him. Boom, 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 boom. Serious injury there if you're not careful. Do you ever see the people then you end up bumping into them? It's you have to take evasive action because they're coming at you with the phone and they're down into the phone and their head's down and everything. And you kind of wonder, oh my God, would you ever look up around you and see where you're going? Anyway, this is a good one because this is one that we saw online over the past couple of days. And it was the story of the young mum who has taken aim at Peter Marks after she was charged €54 for her 12-year-old daughter's haircut. And Maria, and this was on X, went online to vent her anger. She said, €54 to have my 12-year-old's hair cut today in Peter Mark, and they made a point of giving me the student discount on account of her age. If she hadn't got the discount, it would have been €67. We were asking the question, what's the most you've paid for a child's haircut? People were saying Peter Mark appeared to operate a standard pricing model, which starts at €60 for a haircut. They don't seem to have a child's price. Now, I was wondering about this when I heard of, you know, €67 to cut a 12-year-old daughter's hair. But what if you had a 12-year-old daughter whose hair was like an adult's hair, was as long, took as much work as an adult's, and involved as much hairdresser time and product time and treatment time? How could you say that it needed to be half the price if it just happened to be a 12-year-old with hair that could be like anybody else's, kind of long, needed the same amount of work? It's not as if it's a young fella going in for a quick, you know, number two blade all over. Do you know what I mean? So I'm just wondering how people could equate that there should be a big difference if the work is the same, is the point I'm making. Anyway, Kathleen says, It's outrageous, and you're probably paying for the name over the door. There are plenty of great hairstylists out there who could do the same job for a fraction of the price. She was charged 54, but without the discount, it would have been 67. Now, I have no idea what was actually done with regards to the work that was being done on our daughter's hair. It was clearly stated what she was being charged in the first place. So why did she go ahead with getting the service? People are absolutely painful these days. Just say no and walk out if you don't want to pay that price. Deborah says, it's a designer stylist. Of course it's going to be that price. It's the brand. The price is to be expected. Lizzie says, just because she's... Here's the point I was trying to make. Lizzie said, just because she's 12 doesn't mean she has less hair than an adult, which is exactly what I'm saying. What if it was hair like you'd find on somebody 22 or 24 or 26 years old or 44? Should it not be the amount of work that's involved as opposed to whether it's a 12-year-old or a 32-year-old? Anyway, text 0868104106. Lucy says, I got mine done in Spain last year. I had highlights, €20. Everything in Ireland these days is just a rip-off. Janet cuts her own children's hair. She says, how hard would it be to trim a 12-year-old's hair? And Fiona says, happened to me years ago. I was in work in McCurtain Street and we had a do that night. So I said I'd run down to Petermark for a wash and blow dry. I can tell you that it was 15 years ago. I haven't been back. It cost me €90 for a wash and dry. I nearly had a heart attack at the counter. Forgive me now, but is a wash and dry... just they wash your hair and then they blow dry it with a comb or a brush and the hair dryer. There's no cutting involved or anything. It's an expensive shampoo and dry, isn't it? €90. That's the standard lately for long hair. Over 12s are classed as women's cuts. Why didn't you research other places before booking there in the first place? And Margaret says, does it really matter that it's a 12-year-old's head of hair or an older head of hair? Think about it. It's the same work to the stylist. And why would anyone get something done without knowing the price beforehand? There's many more like this. Most bigger company salons don't reduce the rate for children on a Thursday, a Friday or a Saturday because it's their busy period coming into the weekend. Can I remind people that all prices are displayed in salons and online, so you must have known. Also, some 12-year-old girls have more hair to work with than many adults, and a lot of 12-year-old girls take an awful lot more time than an adult. Petermark hairstylists are some of the best trained in Ireland, and it's reflected in the price. I agree it's expensive, but there's thousands of other salons around the country that might have suited her budget. And one or two more. Anna says she didn't bother to look at the price list that was online. Usually it's on the main door as you go in. How could you be surprised at the price? Hopefully this experience will teach you to get the price before you get the service. Actually, you should do that for everything, really, shouldn't you? You kind of should agree a price before you get work done, whether it's on your head or your home or your garden or whatever, the car. I worked for a number of years in Petermark's. The prices are displayed at the front desk. They're also in the window of the salon. There used to be a child's price on a Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, but from Thursday, it's full price. And the prices are normally given to a client before the service. And another one then, supporting the price, that €54 is not going straight into someone's pocket, you know. It's paying staff, electricity rates, water rates, rent, PRSI and VAT. Before somebody takes to social media to slam a business in the current climate, they need to rethink the situation. It is not the business's fault that prices must go up. It's the government. Petrol prices have gone up, but you don't see people targeting petrol stations for it, do you? Same equates for businesses like anyone in hairdressing. There's lots more like that. I'm surprised, actually. It's kind of like 50. Well, I think actually it's probably more 70-30 in support of Petermark as opposed to the woman with the 12-year-old €54 hair. Again, you got to wonder, you know, if it's a 12-year-old with a full head of hair, where you're supposed to go in a case like that. Anyway, keep it coming. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106, and we'll drive on. I think I'm good to go with regards to dealing with that story that we had about a week ago. I was alerted to some video footage that is doing the rounds. I didn't share it because the gentleman involved didn't want me to share it. But I don't know whether you know it, that there are some people going around on mopeds and going around on bikes etc., etc., etc. And you think, if you think it's hot food that they're actually delivering, not all of them are. Some have other products and other services available. Before I do any more on this, I just want Seamus to jump in here because he's the one that's been across it. We've actually seen video footage of a guy on a bike, what looks like a food bag that one might see for Deliveroo. But in this case, he ain't delivering food.
No, he's not delivering food, Neil. It's basically what we can figure out is that it's a Cork mob. They're using food delivery cyclists and drivers as part of a network and are believed to be making a fortune from a large-scale premises in Cork, which they then use as drug distribution hubs.
Can I ask you, okay, because in the case that we've seen and somebody was trialing whether this is true or not and ended up buying maybe 130, 140 euro worth of hashish cannabis from this, the guy who delivered it, would he also be a food delivery driver?
No, because my source who actually got the deal, it's basically a phone number that's passed around word of mouth. It's not online. You just text the phone number and you say, hey, hi, send me the menu. Can I see the menu?
And did they send you a menu of what's available then by text?
They do. They send you a menu with the special offers for that weekend.
And what would be on the menu like? Clearly cannabis because that was purchased. I mean, would you be talking about ecstasy, cocaine, heroin, amphetamines, things like that?
Anything you want, it's there. Like, for instance, the weekly menu for the hashish, it was, they'd give you the price for 3 grams, 7 grams, 14 grams, right up to 56 grams. And they basically, you just send them your air code.
But is it just hash?
No, it's everything. But you see, the way this is operated, Neil, is that you can't go in and you can't just say, what else do you have? Because that will alert suspicion to the
They'll get suspicious about who they're talking to or texting with.
Even when they actually send out the menu. The menu is sent out in different colours. So you might text him today and say, can I see the menu? The menu will be sent to you with blue and a different colour. So they'll send that to a number of people. So if anything kicks off and they get caught, they'll know
who shopped them. But I'm just trying to work out, is there an argument to be made that people should be allowed to buy a bit of cannabis and a bit of hash for their own personal use kind of thing? Or are these characters also selling serious stuff? I'm not saying for a moment that, you know, that people will push back and say, oh, cannabis is very serious and you need to take it seriously.
No, they're as far as my sources are telling me, they're selling everything from tablets to cocaine, the lot.
And the safety for their delivery drivers on the bikes is that people think, and the Gardaí would think, that they're actually just delivering hot food.
Exactly. And they only deliver between certain hours of the day as well. Like, my understanding is that the main hub for this gang is based in Ballincollig. And they have other areas around the city.
And are they local? Are they national? Are they internationally controlled? Do we know?
Well, as far as I'm aware, this is a Brazilian gang who are undercutting the Irish drug dealers in quality and also in price. So we'll say, for instance, 7 grams of hashish is retailing, as far as I'm being told, for 120 euros on the street. This gang are doing it for 90 euros and the quality is supposed to be exemplar.
I would have no idea what a gram of hashish would even look like, not to mind how many tokes you'd get out of a gram. Is that's a significant amount of hashish?
It would, and like when they're going right up to 56 grams of hashish.
That's a big order.
That's a big
order.
That's
hundreds.
That's 560 euros for
that. So then your man rocks up at your door, you give him your air code and he tootles up on the bike with the bag on the back, thinking he's delivering a pizza, but actually what he's given to you on the QT is a little baggie.
It's a brown envelope with, I actually have it here, it's a brown envelope and there's a black sticker on it saying thank you with a smiley face. So it's really business-like. It's another level. These guys have plenty money behind them, judging from what I can see.
Okay, but if they're using Snapchat and... No, they're not using...
No.
It's text.
This is text. It's word of mouth. So I'll go to you, Neil, and I'll say, geez, I got this off this guy. It's amazing quality. This is the phone number. You text. All you had text is, can I see the menu, please? And they'll text you the menu.
Okay, but have we seen any menus with cocaine on it? Have we seen menus with heroin on it? Have we seen menus with barbiturates, amphetamines, tablets on it?
No, because we have to do this carefully, because you can't just go from...
But they will sell you anything.
They will sell you anything. Mm. And, like, I know back in 2020, Interpol sent out an all-points bulletin to police services right across Europe and to alert people to the fact that this was an operation that dealers were doing during the COVID years.
Okay,
and back in
under the auspices that there were food deliveries.
There were food deliveries, and they wouldn't be stopped. There was a gang in Dublin in 2023 last year that were caught doing exactly this.
Okay,
and
so they can hide in plain sight if you like.
They were South American. Yes. No, I don't know why there's only certain hours that they're operating. It's between 4 and 5 and 7 and 8. Is that when the Gardaí do their handover? Is that when normal
But Gardaí don't stop and frisk or search.
No
delivery drivers with
but
food.
But you can't stop and frisk every delivery driver.
There's so
driver.
Many of them. You couldn't do it.
No, you can't.
Okay.
And the thing is, like, these could be going into student accommodations or anywhere, and they look legit and you're getting your drug of choice, you know?
Mm. Okay, we'll pick it up after 11. Text 0868104106. Thanks, Seamus. Back after 11. Hang in there.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Absolutely. Be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. And it being Tuesday, it means we move the Monday Munchies to the day after. So we have a wonderful luxury mini bite box that's chock full of all sorts of delicious treats from the husband and wife duo Carol Barry and Ian Kerrigan at Luso in Ballincollig. You can check out their delicious treats online, lusocork.ie. So we have, as I said, the Bailey's cheesecake, the salted caramel cheesecake. We've got Belgian chocolate dip brownies, triple chocolate brownies, the Rocky Road. We've got the crunchy peanut butter slice. All sorts of beautiful cheesecakes and all sorts of beautiful cakes and treats and biscuits. So you'll win a big box of it for you and all of your workmates. And to win, all you got to do is text who you are and where you are to 086 8104106. Text who you are and where you are to, again, 086 8104106. Meanwhile, from text already this morning, with regards to Eurovision and our chances in Eurovision, not a hope will we win Eurovision with a song like that. A good Irish song would be the job, like we are the Rock and Roll Kids. That was a brilliant one. As in, says Marie from Clann, that we need to go back to the days of the ballads. So thank you for that. On road deaths, I was on the way to Kinsale yesterday. The car behind me, a woman was on her mobile phone chatting away. I know, because I could see her in the rearview mirror, holding her phone with one hand and the other hand on the steering wheel. Yeah, and of course, it's easy to lose control, isn't it, in a situation like that? But even more importantly, you will lose control because she's not really concentrating on the very important job of driving a mechanical vehicle safely, because she's in a conversation, not with the passenger seat, but holding a phone to her ear. That takes extra concentration on the call and not the road. What's happening in Gaza is what the Jewish people have experienced for millennia all over the globe. People, including us, have tried to wipe the Jewish community off the planet for many, many years, says Paddy. And you are, of course, entitled to that opinion and you're in that interpretation of it. Hamas made their own agreement regarding the ceasefire. That's why Israel did not agree to it. You are so biased Did you talk about the rockets launched at the Gaza crossing, killing and wounding several innocent people? No. You just look at it through the prism of the Palestinians every time. Another one or two. My wife drives a Polo. She gets bullied on the road all of the time because of the size of her car. I think when people in big cars and SUVs see the smaller cars, they get this sense of superiority. So the small car must get out of the way. And for me, that is time and time again, ridiculous. Maybe there is truth in that, that the bigger cars feel that they have more dominance on the road. But I'll tell you one thing, if you don't mind me mentioning this at this point in time, far from being bullied on the road, and I'm sure that that is an issue, this woman whose name I have, but she doesn't want to give out because she doesn't want to identify her son, says that her son is currently being bullied in school. She says, after a few talks with his teacher, I felt I was getting nowhere with her, so I asked to meet the principal. But the meeting with the principal was just awful. I found the principal to be very defensive. They refused to accept that my son was being bullied. Apparently, a 9-year-old child can't be bullied, and it's hard to prove it's bullying at a young age like that, according to the principal, that is. I would consider being spat on, being shoved, being pushed around, having horrible things said to you, things taken from you as bullying, wouldn't you? I left the meeting gobsmacked at the reaction I received from the principal. I know of other parents who also found the same principal to be completely unhelpful when it came to issues with their kids. You'd imagine caring for and protecting the mental health of their students would be important to them, but apparently that is of no concern to them, at least in this primary school. I've always taught my child to report bullying to the school and to me if he finds himself in that situation. So you can imagine his confusion when the school basically ignored him and told him, you're not being bullied. Shame on them. Can't come on air as I wouldn't like my child to be identified, but I do hope you get to read this out. I have done, and I wonder if others have been in a similar situation. Text 0868 104 106. Back after the break.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Well, maybe we should be thinking twice every time we see somebody going around with a delivery bag on their back. That it might not necessarily be hot food that's being delivered. I'd like to put something out there, please, and this is following what I was saying there just to Seamus before 11. For the last while, I've known about my son's drug addiction. He sits around, has no motivation. All he does is play games and smoke weed. I tried to keep up, but I'm new to this and I'm completely out of my depth. I heard stories about drugs being sold on Snapchat and drugs being sold on social media. I probably shouldn't have done it, but I checked his phone as I'd recently had money go missing, and I found to discover that he's getting his drugs delivered by a guy from a food delivery service. Or at least, let me say, Neil Prendle will say, purporting to be from one. I could never figure out how he was getting them until this. To say I was shocked at how easy it seems. As a parent, how do we protect our children if drugs being delivered that easy? A guy pretending to be a food delivery person. Am I overreacting? No, I don't think you are, and that's why you emailed, having heard what Seamus had to say with regards to it, that it's very, very easy. I think it's fair to say that you probably could order drugs now faster and get them faster, it would seem, than you could get a pizza or a food delivery, a legitimate food delivery. Particularly you'd say that about cocaine, that's for sure. Michael Guerin is an addiction counsellor himself, and he'll have the inside track on this. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Nice to chat with you again. Do you find when you're dealing with individuals in treatment that they ever talk about how easy the access of drugs is?
Yes, Neil, and I was listening to the conversation between yourself and Seamus there shortly before 11, and a drug user last year, we had a conversation around the procurement of drugs and so on, just on a one-to-one basis, and he used the exact words that you did. The suppliers are hiding in plain sight. So we would have always considered this to be a covert kind of a thing where people would meet in alleyways and in private locations to distribute drugs. But it seems to be the case that they are moving around in plain sight. This people masquerading as delivery drivers is certainly a new development in Cork. But there was a lot of people going around on bicycles and stuff. Dropping off drugs to drug users.
Yeah, they're not necessarily down the old alleyways, not on Lee's side. I mean, if I go into the city on any given day, lunchtime or after lunch, I'll probably come across a deal going down on the South Mall or Grand Parade or maybe around Oliver Plunkett Street in broad daylight, in plain sight.
Yes, absolutely, and that's the way it has moved, that I suppose there's such normalisation now around drug use, certainly amongst the younger age groups, that they don't feel the need to be covert about it anymore. And like, it's kind of, I suppose it's concerning that somebody can, as Seamus said, send a simple text message and receive back a menu of drugs, including beyond cannabis, very, very dangerous drugs, with such simplicity and the openness in which they're delivered and so on.
So there is some kind of, for want of a better word then, some kind of a warehouse or a lockup or a headquarters where all of this cocktail and this whatever you're having yourself drug is being stored.
Yes, undoubtedly. Okay. And they're probably not just in Ballincollig, but probably in every city in Ireland and probably most of the regional towns as well at this stage.
And what's likely to be in there? We know of cannabis. Are we talking about cocaine, heroin, ecstasy, amphetamines? Are we talking about even perhaps methadone or crystal meth, things like that?
We're probably not talking about crystal meth. We're definitely talking about cocaine, because the volumes of cocaine that are being traded in Ireland, we have no idea of. We're possibly also talking about crack cocaine. I'm only speculating now because I've never seen this menu. And we're also possibly looking at counterfeit benzodiazepines as well.
Okay, these would be knockoffs in dodgy labs in Europe somewhere, is it?
Yes, correct. Yeah, these would be tablets purporting to look like that which would come from a chemist, but in actual fact would be counterfeit.
Is alcohol still number one when it comes to addiction, or is cocaine slowly but surely getting up there along with alcohol or gambling?
The one thing we have noticed about cocaine in the past 6 to 12 months is the age profile of cocaine users and cocaine addicts has become very diverse. So if you went back 4 or 5 years ago, people who worked in services, we saw alcohol and gambling and to a lesser extent prescription medication issues with older people. But now we're encountering people with cocaine problems from the age of 18 up into their 50s. So that gives an indication of how the use of cocaine has become so widespread in Ireland, and it also is an indication that there are a cohort of people in society who regard cocaine with the same level of normality as alcohol.
That's a good word. On top of that as well, it's also compounded by the very, how easy it is to actually get your hands on it. It's just a phone call or a text away. There's no huge effort involved.
No huge effort involved. And if you're somebody that goes out for a night in the city, or indeed in any town or village, the likelihood is you'll find it being sold very, very easily.
So why can't there be a safe amount then, Michael, just to play devil's advocate? Because many of them who do use cocaine use it on the weekend or in a social setting, and they get on with their life very well, thank you very much.
Yes, they do, but at the same time, it does have a far higher addictive potential than, say, alcohol. So the possibility of running into trouble with cocaine is far higher. And I suppose we are moving towards, there's no question we are moving towards the decriminalisation of possession of drugs in some shape or form in Ireland in the future. The good thing that would come out of that is that the Gardaí would be able to devote more time and resources to chasing down supply issues rather than dealing with end users.
They decriminalise possession, but would cause chaos in the rehab sector then, is it?
Well, no. That is yet to be seen. But you see, a lot of the resources up to now have been used in catching, apprehending and prosecuting people who were in possession. And it's really pointless because it does nothing to stop the amount of drugs that are coming into Ireland from a supply point of view through criminal sources.
So about maybe 10% of it is caught that's coming in. The other 90% of it is freely traded then, yeah?
It is, and that's the big thing we need to look at. We're looking at these multi-million euro seizures on a regular basis, particularly of cocaine. And I have never heard a cocaine user tell me, nor am I aware of any colleague have a cocaine user tell them that cocaine is in short supply. So if you look at the monetary, the street value of seizures on the one hand that are being taken out of the supply chain, yet there is no shortage, that gives you an indication of how vast the amounts of cocaine are that are coming into Ireland. And the UN reckon now that we are the highest consumers of cocaine
in the EU.
European Union.
Yeah, that's a fairly scandalous accolade to have, isn't it? However, do they? I mean, you obviously sit down and have very serious heart-to-hearts with those people that are presenting for help. Do they talk about when it started to become a problem, when it stopped just being a couple of lines at the weekend?
Yes, they do. And very often that process of crossing that line from recreational use into addictive use isn't perceptible at the time to the user, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, I'm following you, yeah.
Yeah, so like somebody that might start out and they would be maybe, say, out drinking and they encounter cocaine and they start to use it recreationally at the weekends. And all of a sudden, they find themselves using it during the week. And one thing leads to another. But by the time they end up in trouble, it's too late for them to row back of their own accord.
But what's the trouble, though? What's the trouble?
Well, I mean, the trouble is obviously financial, because cocaine is a very expensive habit to maintain. A lot of younger people would tell you that when they get addicted to cocaine, they are forced into distribution because of the people they are indebted to and the fact they can't pay them. And all the other sorts of things as well, trouble with families and employers and so on.
Okay. Could I ask you a question? I'm seeing more and more fights on our streets, right? Big gangs of people fighting. There isn't a month goes by, there's not at least a couple of serious powwows downtown. One more recently in Oliver Plunkett Street where people were going hammer and tongs. Does that fuel anger or testosterone or issues like that, cocaine?
One of the hallmarks of cocaine abuse is aggression and violence. So I can't say what might have caused the bust-up down in Oliver Plunkett Street, but I do know for a fact that a lot of people who work in hospitals and A&E departments, chief among them is a good Corkman, Chris Luke, will tell you that a lot of the things they would have seen down through the years were fueled by cocaine. And people can get very angry and agitated and are very easily sparked off when they are on cocaine. So it's conceivable, at least, that these big fights that you're talking about, cocaine could be a factor in that.
So it's not a relaxant, it's the opposite effect, is it?
No, it's a stimulant. And it gives people confidence. It gives people a feeling of invincibility in some cases. That is short-lived, less about a half an hour. And if you mix that with alcohol, it can cause quite bad behaviour.
Yeah, it could be one of the reasons why we see more aggression. Of course, you can't say with any amount of certainty. And also, I believe also because it's relatively cheap, very easy to get and relatively cheap as well.
Yeah, and I suppose the big concern about it is, Neil, we have no concept or understanding of the amount of cocaine that is coming into Ireland and being traded. And the Gardaí are grievously under-resourced to deal with what are very complex, very intricate, very well-run international organisations that are supplying cocaine in Ireland.
So do the international organisations, because there was a reference made there to some outfit apparently out around Ballincollig who are undercutting Irish prices, does that mean that, let's say they are South American, that they actually have boots on the ground here as well, running the network here?
They have, but I suppose the worrying part about it is that if theoretically all the boots on the ground in Ireland were taken out through the criminal justice system,
we would have no effect on the overall. They would just be replaced because the majority of the people who control the drug supply into Ireland, I believe, are outside the jurisdiction, and therefore the Gardaí, it's an impossibility for them to get anywhere near them.
Yeah, so we're wasting our time then, aren't we? Even trying to tackle it, or you know, continuing down the criminal route. Like, is it pointless?
Well, it's fairly pointless at this stage, putting an end user who there is no evidence to suggest that this person is supplying to anyone through a punitive criminal justice system, when in actual fact, if that person is addicted to that substance, it's help they need and not punishment.
But how could you say that? Like, that's like equating it to a drink driver. Don't blame the drunk behind the wheel. Blame the pub that gave it to him, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there's a difference now. A drink driver is engaging in an activity that is dangerous. I'm talking about somebody caught in possession of a substance. Now, I know there are certain leniencies or discretions that have been afforded to the Gardaí in changes in legislation in the past few years where they can caution people. But really and truly, prosecuting somebody who is in possession of drugs at this point in time is doing nothing whatsoever to prove the problem. We're 40 years at this, Neil. Prosecuting people.
That's the thing.
Yeah, it's worse. It's gotten not better.
Yeah, and you, I mean, without going into a huge amount of detail, but that shooting in Dublin of the 20 or 21 years old, that seems to be drug related. That seems to be gang related. Some kind of a feud. All too often, the reasons behind these attacks and deaths are drugs and gangland activity involving drugs.
Undoubtedly. And the I suppose the thing that is the main commercial activity of this gangland criminal underworld is the sale and supply of drugs, because it's so lucrative and because there are so many people out there who want to purchase cocaine or who want to purchase any kind of drugs. But particularly the big issue in Ireland here and now is cocaine, and the vast array of people across all social and demographic classes that are taking it.
But just finally, Michael, I won't keep you much longer, but at the end of the day, the number one issue is still, correct me if I'm wrong, with alcohol, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's alcohol exclusively. Imagine you have some people who have a problem with alcohol, maybe cocaine, and even maybe cocaine and gambling. But as an individual product, it's alcohol.
As an individual product, it's alcohol, which would lend credence to the argument that legalization of illicit drugs wouldn't solve anything, because alcohol is legalized and it's regulated and it's taxed and it's all these things, and we still have an enormous problem with it.
Okay, finally, can I just thank you for your intervention there about a fortnight ago with a chap who was on air with me. Obviously can't talk about his treatment because that is private. I hope he's doing well, and I want to thank you for getting involved in that, and I hope that he comes through and that I have an opportunity to talk to him when he finishes his rehab period. So that was a wonderful thing, and I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Neil. My pleasure.
Take care, Michael, as always.
Pick
up the phone, text 086 8104 106. If you've got an email or a story you'd like to share, you can do so to neil@redfm.ie, which is exactly what Jimus does. He says, the idea of legalizing cocaine and other drugs is not that far-fetched, you know, when you consider the government already has a soft approach to drugs on our streets right now. For example, we have needle exchanges, we have wet rooms, the government gives out methadone like snuff at a party, the legal system turns a blind eye to crime, the cops turn a blind eye to drug dealers on our streets, regardless of the number of cameras at the disposal of Big Brother in any given city. We already have a legal drug problem in this country with people on medication way longer than they need be, or indeed people on the wrong medication. We only have to look at most people we know over 50 that are on medication. They started with one tablet, and over the years this has mounted up to a cocktail of 5 or sometimes 10 tablets a day. It's like they're using the people of Ireland as test dummies for the pharmaceutical industry. Other addictions that are tolerated in this country? Alcohol. This has and still is destroying lives. It's the catalyst to a lot of male suicides in Ireland. It wrecks homes. It wrecks children's lives. If they tried to get a license for alcohol today as a new product, it would be blocked on many different grounds. Gambling, again, its grip on people that are addicted to it is frightening. People have lost their family, their friends, their homes and their lives because of it. But yet, gambling is tolerated. All the above have one thing in common. They are great tax earners for the Exchequer, and some of it is used to fund the fallout of the people that are addicted. So the idea of legalizing cocaine and other drugs would just allow them to be controlled safer. It would take the profits away from criminal gangs. It would take the shame and the fear away from the user. The only downside, he says, I would see to legalizing drugs is that we would also have to get rid of cash. Something I said I would always fight against, as I'm a big user of cash. But if it meant that we could at least take control of the problems, we might have some hope of curing the problem. Thank you for that. It's interesting. You talk about alcohol, you talk about cocaine, you talk about gambling and the impacts of all of that. But I don't understand how the legalizing of it, the upside to it would be, it would be controlled and probably safer and would also be a huge tax revenue. But how would it result in getting rid of cash? Can't see the connection there. So do come back and explain at least that part. Text 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
And lots of different texts on that. I'll come back to that in a few minutes' time. Let me just do Monday Munchies of a Tuesday, courtesy of ourselves and Luso. The next bunch of shout-outs for you. I'd like to nominate the nurses and doctors in the children's unit at the Mercy Hospital. A few weeks back, my son was very sick, spent a week there, and they looked after him so well. This is Kate and Shanakeel. It's always great to hear the positive stories. Thank you for that. To Diane, Lorraine, Pat, Mags and Rose, nominating those staff working hard at Terence McSweeney Community College in Knocknahe. Students and teachers are off today, so we are working hard in their absence and we're enjoying some peace and quiet. Hi, I'm Mick Dillon. I'd like to nominate the staff at Ballincurrig Care Home to give them a big thank you for the care they provided to my friend who was with them for the last 2 months. Nothing was too much trouble to them, but unfortunately my friend lost his fight for life yesterday morning. They're second to none, deserve a little treat, and I want to say thank you for all the families and the people that they care for. That's lovely, Mick. Thank you for that. I'm so sorry to hear about your pal. To everybody at Simotech in Carrigaline, to the VHI Swift Care Clinic in Cork, working very hard and would love a treat. They are good people down there. I had some dealings with them the back of last year on a few different cases with regards to my broken arm, and they were lovely people and they worked very, very hard. It's a good service. Building Stone for all your building supplies. Morning to Connor and Dripsy. To the gang at the Cope Transport in Montanati are listening, that love the sweet treats to finish a long weekend of work. To Icy Pop, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. They're out in Westfield doing a fantastic job caring for the elderly. To everybody at Cork Builders Providers in the Kinsale Road, to Sullivan's Pharmacy in Grange, morning to Fidelma, and also to Dunworth Office Supplies and Rycal.ie in Kanturk, and Let's Party in Duhallow, also in Kanturk, and they would share if they were lucky enough to win. So, if I get a chance, I'll do a third batch of shout-outs for the Monday Munchies of a Tuesday, courtesy of ourselves and the delicious food creators, cake creators, biscuit creators, chocolate creators, Luso in Ballincollig. Now, I'll come back to everything else, but I'm just keen to talk to Audrey, who got in touch with me. It's an interesting story. You're told to shop around. Remember earlier this morning, the woman who got her child's hair cut by Peter Marks and paid a huge amount of money for it, a 12-year-old. Again, shop around first. Know the price of things. Anyway, enough of me. Audrey, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm well. And you were shopping around, in fairness to you. Go ahead. What's the backstory to this? Yeah, what happened?
Well, my own company, the quote was to Ives 700, and when I rang on to get a new quote, as you do.
I forgot to say, it's for car insurance. Go ahead.
Yes, car insurance.
So your renewal was, what was it last year?
Can't remember.
Ah, but it was nowhere near 700, I say, was it?
No. I think it was something like 480 or something like that.
And did you ask them why did it go from 480 to 700?
The prices went up and they couldn't bring it down any more than 599.
So straight away when you pick up the phone, they'll knock 100 off. Amazing, yeah. Isn't it? So everyone should pick up the phone. Mm-hmm. So you decided, in spite of the €100 discount, if you like, to shop around.
Shop around. So I was in work the following day and I tried to enlist myself and went into the office and we done it online. And when we got to the end of the process, which with this company,
No, it's okay, because I know that they're listening at the moment. So was this with Liberty?
Yes.
Okay. So you did the online, it's very straightforward, do it all in, name, address, date of birth, driving, details of the car, all that kind of thing. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And when you get to the end of it, it just says, sorry, can't process this. So I got the number and I rang straight away, asked them why couldn't be processed, because they said you're allowed to get 25% discount on this. So rang anyway, the girl, I told him my date of birth, and oh, should I have you here? I can see where it stopped. Yes, we're not insuring in that area. Say sorry, and she repeated it. So I said, you can't be caught because of where I live. And she said, yes, we're not insuring in that area.
What area?
Not mainly. No, she didn't mention the area, she just said the area.
But you had put in the online application.
Where I live.
We are not insuring in that area. And did you ask her, you say you asked her why?
I didn't, I was so shocked. I just said, okay, thank you, bye. That's exactly what I said. Because as the day went on, I got angrier. But 5 minutes after that call, I rang my daughter's crowd and they insured me. They quoted me 400 and I went with it straight away.
Okay.
Actually 410.
Okay.
And I went for them straight away.
And had you even got a quote from Liberty before?
I had a few years ago. I was with them years ago.
I know, a big company and a well respected company, and they've got competitive quotes.
I never.
Okay, so not insuring in that area. For house insurance now, there are areas of Cork where you will not get house insurance. A lot of it is on the south side. There's issues now around Beaumont, Blackrock, Ballantemple, Douglas. Many won't quote because of this thing called subsidence. You're aware of that? Or if you're on a floodplain. Go to Middleton, you wouldn't get house insurance because of the flooding.
Yeah.
So they're kind of selective in what they want to cover. I get that. Subsidence could really result in the house falling down. I understand that. But what's wrong with insuring cars that are driven and are saved and kept in Knocknaheeny?
No, like I said, I was with them before. Never had a problem getting insured with them. Never.
Okay.
Because it's with this called covering the click and they shop around for you.
What are they called?
So one year is covering the click. They shop around for you. You don't have to do it. And one year, my insurance just came in with Liberty on it, so I knew I was with them.
Okay.
So that was the cheapest quote they got.
Okay, and where did you end up getting, where did you end up renewing then? You were just making the point there, you got something for 400.
IBGM, I think it's called, or IGBM, I think that's it.
But if you hadn't, okay, there's a lot of things going on here. If you hadn't done anything and just paid the renewal, you'd have paid 700. By shopping around, you managed to get it for 400, which is
410.
But during all of this, Liberty said, we're not insuring in that area.
That's correct.
Okay.
And the following day then, or the following evening, I had a phone call from Liberty apologising. The girl that answered me on the phone shouldn't have said what she said. And I said to the girl that rang me, I said, you actually listened to the phone call. So she was only reading what she could see on her screen, which isn't a bit nice. But she said she shouldn't have said that to you. She apologised for her, and in the same breath, she said, I think my staff need a bit more training.
Ah, yeah, but where would they have just plucked from the sky Knocknaheeny?
I mean, exactly. She basically was only calling out what she saw on her screen.
Was the call centre in Cork, or was it up the country? Do we even know? If it's up the country, how do they even know that Knocknaheeny is Knocknaheeny a red flag? Are they saying that the drivers are more dangerous, or there's more of a chance of a car being stolen, or what?
Well, as long as I'm driving, never had a problem, no points, clean lights, never had an accident, thank God, but no problem.
So why do they call?
I just can't understand why she said that to me.
Yeah, I know. Well, Liberty are listening to this conversation now. They're investigating it, and they will revert back to me tomorrow morning, and we'll try and unravel as to, you know, why this happened, or what happened, or what should have happened, or what should not have happened. But somebody did say to you, "We are not offering quotes in that area at the moment."
Yeah. that's
okay.
Exactly.
So I'd be very keen to know, is there a list of places, and if, you know, Loch Nahin, maybe other people have similar examples of what you went through. And if they do, let me know. Text 0868104.
I've never heard family or friends say anything in regards to they want to show me because of where I live. Never heard of it.
You remember there was a time years ago when people couldn't get a job nor an interview because of where they
live. Well, that was, yeah, that was, I remember that distinctly. I do, when that old. You had to give an aunt's address or someone's address that wasn't Loch Nahin.
Yeah, you certainly did. By and large, it usually would have to be a Southside address. What?
Yeah, I'm working on my life, and my address from the age of 15 was Loch Nahin.
Has anybody ever, lads, listening to this, had a situation where that happened to them? Text 0868104106. Let us see what Liberty have to say in the morning with regards to this, Audrey, because I'd be keen to know, and I'm sure you would be as well.
The following evening, when she did ring me back, she asked me if they could send me a quote. I said, you can send me all the quotes you want. They said, I'm after getting insured. Now, 5 minutes after your call, I got insured.
Okay, but you, I mean, you'd be insulted with something like that being said.
I was very insulted. As the day went on, the angrier I got.
I know.
At the time, I was speechless. I couldn't even question her.
Why did they call you back at all?
The following evening.
Yeah.
I was absent in emails.
All right, you weren't taking it lying down. All right, okay.
Yes.
Okay, let's see what kind of response. They wanted to have a listen to this conversation on air. I get that, I respect that. We'll see what they have to say on the matter in the morning, all right?
No problem.
Okay, thanks for coming on, Audrey, and thanks for filling me in on that one. Appreciate it.
Thanks for your time, Neil.
Cheers, Audrey, take care. We were talking earlier on this morning about somebody whose daughter was charged €54 for, daughter being 12 years old in Petermarks. You know, hair can be expensive, but again, you know, there are signs and there are prices, apparently, where you can see what the price of a thing is before you buy it. But doesn't it go to show that whether it is, there'd be loads of different things here. One would be house insurance that you should be shopping around for. Another would be car insurance that you should be shopping around for. Another is buying a car. You know, you shouldn't go into one dealer and just pay the price. Have prices from other places, right? So you get all of that. Then it could be renewing your mobile phone package for the year. It could be your utilities. It might be gas. It might be electric. It could be anything. You know, even from time to time, I suppose there's nothing wrong with doing a bit of Googling and finding out who's cheaper with regards to a fill of oil for the central heating system. There are so many different ways that people can save money. There's a typical example of it. If Audrey had done nothing, she'd have renewed for 700 instead of shopping around and ultimately getting it for 400. So we'll find out and see tomorrow morning as to what Liberty have to say by virtue of a response. But your own stories are always welcome here. Text 0868104106. Back after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Okay, squeeze a couple of calls on this side of midday, but just ahead of that, it's important to stay on top of texts as well. Why every time when there is a Palestinian topic, it's so one-sided? You, as in me, never talk about October 7th, a terrible terror attack on civilians, kids, elderly. I have a feeling you won't even read this out because it won't fit your narrative. If people want to ban Israel from Eurovision, they should also ask to ban Palestine as well. Why is it okay for pro-Palestine people accusing Israel of genocide at the same time chant genocide from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free? This chant has been taught in schools in Palestine from a very young age, putting a hate seed into young minds. Why is this never being told? Tell me one military conflict, where one side sends texts to all civilians 2 weeks in advance, warning them of an attack and asking them to leave the area. Yes, this is what Israel is doing all of the time. Please be more fair if you speak about this conflict. Don't say only things that are being fed by Islamist activists. Can't come on air, but you need more balance. Thank you for that one. And then, with regards to another issue involving balance, a final text. There's genuine mainstream media blackout this morning of the thousands that marched yesterday in opposition to the government's plantation of Ireland. Look at all the national news outlets online. The proof of the strength of the march is all over X and Twitter, but not a peep from the main media, including yourselves. It didn't even make the government mouthpiece RTE's 6-1 News. Are you, Neil, under instruction not to cover the protest? Can't come on air working so my tax can fund immigrants. I can't read out the rest of it because I think even that person that sent it to me knows that parts of it are abusive. Hopefully this text makes it past your leftist editors. Well, I suppose ultimate control really would lie with me, even if things are given to me by producers and teams that work with me. I'll always have a quick look anyway. But no, that didn't get lost in translation. I have read it out. I don't know how many were at the protest or the rally against migration. I did read the papers this morning that spoke of hundreds. I've seen a few texts this morning saying that it ran to thousands. I don't know, but I'm certainly not engaged in anything in any way, shape or form with regards to any form of censorship. It just needs to be fair and it has to be balanced, and I'm not going to get involved in name calling or any kind of threats against individuals or groups from other communities. That's all. I got to keep the peace in that regard. But no, I've read it out. There it is. And if there were thousands, well and good. I don't know, but you're telling me it was thousands. Text 0868 104 106. How am I doing? Can I just talk, if you don't mind, just a quick one from Paul, because I know we were talking earlier on about, you know, food delivery drivers, in inverted commas, toting drugs to people. You order online, you text, and I suppose then you pay by Revolut or whatever the case may be. So maybe in the video that I saw somebody actually transferring over cash at the door for their drugs of choice. But one of the points that I made to Michael Guerin, the rehab counsellor, was that alcohol really is the big one when it comes to addiction problems and issues for somebody's life or indeed their family or their children or their job or those around them. And many were saying, and have been saying in the past, that, you know, a lot of this is learned behavior and it's all in the rearing. Like, for instance, the text that said, my son asked if he could have a drink at home. He's 15. He said that his friends are allowed to have one or two cans at home with his parents at the weekend. So he asked if he could do the same. As a 15-year-old who asked me this question, I was shocked. Are parents allowing their underage children to drink at home? Is this becoming more normalised? I know what you're saying. You have a 15-year-old whose pals at home are having a couple of cans under the supervision of their parents. Now, that can go two ways. They can become responsible drinkers, or indeed it could lead to problems later in their lives. I don't have the answer to that, to be absolutely honest with you. Other societies seem to do it. The French do it with vino, don't they? A couple of cans for a 15-year-old. I don't know whether they'd get a lip for it at that age or whether they would become responsible drinkers. Paul, what do you think? Could be one or the other. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it could be one or the other, Neil, and there's no right answer to that question. The first thing I would do is I would decide whether my son or daughter was mature enough, and only the parents can answer that. And one thing I'd like to point out, which a lot of people say, it's illegal. It's not illegal. Not in the home. It's not, as long as the parents have consent, it's perfect.
At what age, forgive me now, I didn't check this morning, at what age is it legal to give somebody a drink in the home?
The law doesn't put an age on it. It just says under 18, with consent of the parents, our kids are allowed to have alcohol.
So maybe any age. 12-year-old, 14-year-old?
I just Googled it. Well, I wouldn't give a 12 or 13-year-old.
But you know what I mean? If there's no age, then it can be any age.
Well, that's what the law seems to say. It just says under 18 can be served at home with the parents' consent.
It's a bit vague, isn't it, Paul?
It seems a bit vague, that's the wording of it.
Okay.
No, I wouldn't give an 11 or 12 or 13-year-old alcohol, but I just wanted to clear that up. People saying that it's illegal.
Because you also believe that, and if they chose to do it, it's nobody else's business.
No. Like, what happens next door is nothing to do with me, as long as it is legal. Now, if they're jumping around the place drunk at 2 in the morning, screaming and shouting, then obviously that's a different story. But I think, too, Neil, it'll give you some kind of guideline as to how they behave with alcohol in them. If they're aggressive at that age, we're going to be aggressive probably at 25. I remember 18 is just a guideline, Neil. The science isn't 100% on it. An 18-year-old could have the body and the brain of a 25-year-old, or an 18-year-old could have the brain or the body of a 16-year-old.
Why would somebody at 15 want to be encouraged to have a predilection to have a couple of cans? It's not normal behaviour for a 15-year-old. That's for a later age.
I wouldn't encourage it. I definitely wouldn't go up to a 15-year-old and say, look, have you ever thought about having a drink? let's go down and get a couple of cans. I wouldn't encourage it, but if they asked me the question, it would certainly be something I would think about. I wouldn't flat out say no. Like a couple of cans will make a 16-year-old a little bit tipsy, and it'll give you an idea. And another thing, if you give them a couple of cans and they're in the other room, if they come in after 10 minutes and say, where's my second can, I'd see that as a red flag.
And do you mind, are you talking from experience here with the children of your own?
No, I don't. I've worked in hospitality all my life. I never obviously dealt with underage people, but I know how people behave with alcohol in them, and there's no age to say certain age groups behave better than others. I've had 18-year-olds trying to throw punches at me, and I've had 60-year-olds trying to throw punches at me.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
There's no age group here that behave better than others.
Yeah, it may not lead them to acts of violence or throwing punches, but it might lead to an addiction issue, though, do you think? No?
No, because there's no science behind that.
Okay. And would you think it's commonplace then, the suggestion that my 15-year-old son says that his friends are allowed to have two cans at home with the parents at the weekend? Would you think that that's commonplace?
I wouldn't know, Neil, to be honest. All my friends, their kids are kind of 10, 11, 9, 4. Like, I wouldn't know. I'd say it does happen. I think we'd be naive to think it doesn't. And the thing too is, Neil, most 16s are going to do it anyway.
Well, that is true. That is true. If they want to, they will. So maybe under supervision wouldn't be a bad idea. And maybe with the parents watching or on their watch, they might have children that would go up to have a more responsible attitude. A bit like we're outside the European norm in this, aren't we? I mean, the French do it differently. The Italians do it.
In England, you can have a pint in the pub at 16.
Ah, come on. You're joking me.
No, you can't. If you're with your parents and you're having a meal, you can have a pint in England. A pint, cider, beer or wine. You just can't go to the bar.
Really?
I swear to God. I wouldn't make it up. I'm not going to come on the radio and make that up.
That's out there. That's out there, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I think a lot of pubs don't allow it, but it is within the law.
Okay, let's pick up on this in the morning. I'm out of time for now. Thanks for your contribution, Paul. Good idea or bad idea? Text 0868104106. The lines will stay open on 0818104106. And indeed, you can always email neil@redfm.ie. Can I just say that our Lusso Monday Munchies winners of a Tuesday today, with a wonderful luxury mini bite box even, containing all of these wonderful cake delights, courtesy of ourselves and Lusso Ballincollig, is an office from Ballincollig. And that is Martina and all of the crew at Maxi Zoo head office in Ballincollig, who are dying after the weekend. Not quite sure what you're dying from, I'd hazard a guess. But congratulations, food's on the way and the Red Patrollers will deliver it at lunchtime. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.
When Cork talks, Cork people blow my mind.
They talk to Neil Prendeville
on Red FM.